team of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. We also welcome the IEC and the officials and commissioners present here. You are all welcome to Home Affairs meeting today. Today we are dealing with the IEC annual report. I'm not sure whether it will be necessary for us to introduce ourselves because I think we almost know one another now. I think we can start with our meeting. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and good morning to you and to Honourable Members. It is once again our pleasure to be here this morning to present our annual report for the financial year 2012 and 2013. I would like to convey to you, Honourable Chairperson, the approaches of three commissioners: the Deputy Chair of the Commission, Mr. Terry Zelani, Commissioner Bongani Finga, and the Commissioner Judge Thompson Makanya. As you have rules, that is not necessary for us to introduce ourselves because we have been to this committee a number of times, and you're all familiar with the team that is here representing the Electoral Commission. I'm going to make a few remarks with your permission, Chairperson, and thereafter the substantive presentation on the report will be made by the Chief Electoral Officer, who is the Accounting Officer for the organization, and the Chief Financial Officer will then make a presentation with a presentation on the financial statements. The significance of this report is that it is the first one that we are presenting as members of the commission who were appointed in 2011. You would recall that the annual report for the past financial year, really we were appointed towards the end of that financial year. So part of the report was dealt with at a time when our predecessors were there, and part of the activities were dealt with during our term of office. So this one, really, we take responsibility for everything that is in the final, in the annual report, because we oversaw all the activities. We set for ourselves the Commission's strategic objectives, which are also informed by the vision that we adopted for ourselves once after our appointment, which we called Vision 2018. And we are pleased, Honorable Chairperson and members, to say that to a very large extent we have been able to achieve the targets that we had set for ourselves in the strategic objectives, except for at least 22%, which means that we achieved about 78% of those targets, and the CEO will give more details as far as this is concerned. Another major achievement is that the Auditor General has on this occasion raised any new significant items on material non-compliance with legal prescripts, and has not also raised any matters of emphasis. Of course, there are a few challenges that we still have, and the CFO will highlight this in the report that she's going to be presenting. There are operational challenges also that will be highlighted during the presentation of the report, and I do not intend to go into these in detail, save to give a high-level indication of those challenges. The first one is that we are operating now within a highly litigious environment. In the past, we did not have as many cases as we now have on the electoral process. And of course, some people regard that as a bad thing. Others say that, look, our democracy is maturing. The electorate, together with the political parties, now understand the electoral process, and they are able to see whether it's non-compliant, and they challenge non-compliance with the law in the courts. And that's not probably not a bad thing, because as a democracy, it's better for people to challenge non-compliance with electoral laws in the courts of law than go to the streets. So that's one, and you know, challenge that we see, that we see more and more elections being challenged in courts. Secondly, I think the challenges that we have had say to us that we have to step up training of our electoral staff, so that the people who work for us in the voting station are equipped to interpret the law and do so correctly, and to apply it and apply it fairly to everybody. So it's one of the issues that we're looking at quite carefully, to improve the training of our electoral staff. But also, I think related to that is that we can only get good quality of presiding officers and deputy presiding officers if we pay them a reasonable stipend. Because as you know, we don't pay people a salary, we pay them a stipend or a honorarium. So we have to ensure that to get the quality that we require, we have to look at the stipend as well. We have to intensify our conflict resolution or management ability so that we can identify conflict and deal with it before it escalates. So it's one of the areas that we look at in our report. We have to be able as a commission to deal with complaints adequately. Our presiding officers have to be able to deal with the complaints that arise on voting day at the voting station. And we as a commission have to be able to deal with objections that are brought to our attention, raised by political parties and candidates, and we have to be able to do so expeditiously. And it's one of the issues also that the CEO will touch on. Civic and democracy education is an area that we have to pay particular attention to. Our stakeholder engagement as well, to ensure that we engage as many stakeholders as possible on the electoral process. And during the period under review, you also know, Honourable Chair, that we dealt with the electoral amendment bill. We submitted proposals to this committee, and I will not go into detail as far as that is concerned. And another issue that we looked at is the compatibility of the new smart ID card with our green barcode ID, to ensure that as we go to an election, our systems are such that can accommodate both. It's one of the things that we looked at in the year of review. We also had to look at the impact of the census 2011 on registration gaps, and we looked at that, particularly the registration gap among young people between the ages of 18 and 29, and the CEO will talk about this. Also, we had an increased number of delegations that we hosted from other parts of the continent and the world. For the first time, we had even the high, the Electoral Commission of Egypt, in the way that they are constituted. They are made up of judges who look at the electoral process at presidential level. You have a different body looking at the parliamentary elections. So we had a very large group of commissioners who are all judges who visited us. We had also people from Uganda, Angola, Zambia. Lots of delegation coming to visit us, and we observed a large number of elections as well, and details are in the report. Number of political parties that are registered increased during the reporting period. The number of by-elections decreased. There is an impression out there that the number of by-elections increased, but if you look at the number in this financial year under review compared to the other financial years, the numbers have gone down. As far as research is concerned, we conducted a survey on the state of democracy in our country, and the details thereof are in the report. We also conducted a seminar on e-voting, which was attended by the Honorable Chairperson of this committee, was among the people who attended the e-voting seminar, and the CEO will give details on really what we learned from that process. We have to communicate with young people, so we have to step up our social media platform in order to reach young people, and we came up with strategies in the year review, which the CEO will also be talking about. On the whole, I must say that we are satisfied that we were able to we performed satisfactorily, and we achieved to some extent the targets that we had set for ourselves. But as I indicated at the beginning, there is always room for improvement. And having said with these few remarks, Honorable Chairperson and members, with your kind permission, I am inviting the CEO to make a full presentation on our annual report for the financial year 2012-2013. I thank you.
It's just that when the chairperson has spoken, one gets tempted to acknowledge some of the things and perhaps pose some questions, but we'll follow your protocol, Madam Chairperson.
Over to you, Mr. Dumepi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you and members of the committee. And good morning to members of the Commission and the IC team. The report really starts with our vision, which is very well known in the House, and I think I should really not be dwelling on this. If it is possible, even the mission, Chairperson, if you allow, we will go over the values as well. We have not changed these values. The main values of the organization, and in the reporting period, they remained valid. The strategic outcome oriented goals, we have changed moving forward. But for the period covered by this report, there were five of them. The first was to promote principles of peaceful, free and fair elections, and that will deal with the indicators that are under. The second one was to improve organizational efficiency and effectiveness. The third one was to manage free and fair elections. The fourth was to strengthen electoral democracy through education for public participation. The fifth one was to support the core business of the Electoral Commission. It is notable that in the period under review, a number of these were redefined, and the measurements of these strategic outcome-oriented goals was reviewed. We will talk about those in detail. In terms of our constitutional mandate, in this period, it has not changed, and so I will also not deal with it if you would permit me, Chairperson. Legislative mandate also remained the same, did not change, and also I will not deal with if permitted. That then brings me to the organogram of the Electoral Commission, the organizational structure. That structure was revised over a year ago, in fact more than a year ago. And I am pleased to indicate that the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer for Outreach is on board. When we were dealing with this matter the last time, we were recruiting that Deputy Chief Electoral Officer. We now have her on board. Her name is Dr. Nomsa Masuku, and the committee will get to meet her at some point. When we look at the key performance areas, I start with the first one that supports the promotions of principles of peaceful, free, and fair elections. There, one of the performance indicators, in fact, one of the two performance indicators we have, is the number of meetings with relevant stakeholders. And we had set out to have 25 of these meetings. In the year under review, we achieved 24. And the one that we did not achieve was postponed. It was scheduled for the 28th of March, which regrettably was the last year, one of the last few days of the financial year, and postponed to the new financial year, and therefore we were not able to achieve that. It did, in fact, take place in the new financial period. The second one is the number of interactions with relevant stakeholders. And there we had set out to achieve 86 of those in the period under review, and we did we set out to achieve 12, but we achieved 36. The chairperson has indicated that we've had a very large number of teams coming to visit us. We did not say no, and I think it's a good thing. And we met every one of them. And therefore, we overachieved in that area. I guess it's a good thing. And the second area is when we look at the improvement to organizational efficiency and effectiveness. And there we have a number of measures that we, performance indicator that we use. The first one is the number of quarterly reports that we submit to members of the commission. Every quarter we submitted a report on how we were doing against the strategic outcome-oriented goals. And in every one of those quarters, we've been able to achieve the targets we set ourselves. Number of annual written reports in place, we fortunately have one, and we have been able to achieve that. The number of risk-based annual internal audit plans approved, there's always one which is put before us, and it's approved in terms of the plans put before us by the audit committee, and that we have also achieved. The number of quarterly progress reports submitted to the audit committee, we have also achieved those quarterly reports, four of them, which is one every quarter. We also looked at the development an adoption of consolidated processes for monitoring legal compliance. This is a matter we have discussed previously, and we had indicated that part of the risk management process that we are reviewing will include this. This work has begun, but was not completed in the period under review. In fact, there are other measures that have been introduced, and we are hoping that it will be completed in this period. Quarterly review and update of organization strategic risk register. We have put in place an executive risk management committee that produces a risk register that is updated every month. The risk registers are also dealt with in every area of the organization, in every division and in every province. And we look at those quarterly and update them. They form part of the reporting that we do when we report quarterly. The third area that we are looking at is the area of managing free and fair elections. And in that area, I must indicate that we have a number of measures. The first one is the frequency with which the voter's roll is updated against the National Population Register, and we have, in fact, attained checks that are 12 that we had set ourselves. This really translates into one check a month. Whether we have by-elections or we don't have by-elections, we continuously update the voters' roll. It will be. It is important to point out that we register people all the time, so we put them on the voters' roll and we verify even as we do so, so that the voters' roll remains current. The second one is the number of meetings with members of the party liaison committees. And we measure this both, in fact, at national level, at provincial level, and municipal level. Closer to an election, excuse me. season. It is important to note that the PLC meetings do increase, and in this period we had planned 1,234 of this. We achieved 1,325. A number of things have happened. Partly the process of demarcation and us checking with our colleagues in the provinces has taken account of some of the overachievements, but also the fact that we had begun preparing for elections is taken into account in the numbers, the overachievements. We also looked at the funding of political parties, and here we look at the number of disbursements that we make. Members will recall that we make four disbursements to parties, represented parties in a year, and we have done so. Those parties that had their financial situations or housekeeping order were provided, and those that did not were informed to comply, and once complied, they were provided with the funding necessary. The percentage of elections which voters, for which the voters' roll was certified in accordance with the election timetable, every one of those elections and by-elections was in fact certified in accordance with the timetable. The average number of days in which elections are conducted from date of vacancy, Chairperson, I'm very pleased to indicate that in the period under review, the law requires that the period be 90 days. The average number that we attained was 67. This means that we've cut that period by 23 days. The way in which we did this in period also changed. We, you know, previously we used to say complied, but now we measure the amount of days within which that is achieved. We also look at the number of calendar days in which we replace proportional representation vacancies. And you know, the law requires that we do so within 35 days. It does also provide that, you know, we could do so as soon as the parties had advised us or have revised their reserve lists. And in this instance, our achievement was 15 days. And so we were able to cut 20 days in this process, which is often a welcome relief for municipalities involved and the parties that are replacing. The average period in time, I mean, in calendar days in which election results are announced by the Electoral Commission, we have 7 days within which the election results must be announced. But in the period under review, of course, all of them were by-elections. On the night, you know, on which the by-elections are conducted, at the end of that period, we declare the results. So it is effectively 1 day. I imagine that, on, you know, if we should wait for 7 days with the norm that has been set, it'll be very difficult. And so we'll continue to seek this 1 day period for by-elections. But in fact, we do have 7, and so we are quite happy with the achievement. The proportion of registered voters who vote, this we had indicated in the past that is intended for, you know, yes, for general elections. We continue the organization to look at ways to meaningfully report this, and you know, when we have found that way, we will deal with. But it is not relevant for the period under review. With respect to determining the bill of materials and ensuring that it's signed off for each electoral event, that we have achieved. Every one of our electoral events has, in fact, had a steady bill of materials. No problems have been experienced in this regard, and we continue to improve our processes even as we lead up to elections, general elections next year. Concerning the bill of materials, in terms of the triple PFA, which is the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, our target there was that every one of them, we need to ensure that we comply, and we have. In that instance, there is no deviation. When looking at the number of voting stations asked, and secured and functional for elections. I do wish to bring it to attention, one, that at the time when this plan was devised, we had 20,868 voting stations countrywide. But in that period, we did not have a general election. So this would have indicated all of the instances where elections were held. And so, though we complied for every one of those instances where elections are held, it did not apply to all of the voting stations in the country. And therefore, this would not have been relevant or applicable in the period under review. We've also linked to the 20,868 voting stations that we have. We have set ourselves a target of 13,200, which is 68% of those stations, to ensure that these are schools. And in that regard, we continue to be within achievement of the target. But once again, it was not measured for all of the voting stations, as we only had by elections, not a general election. On the next one, we deal with the number of warehousing facilities and full-time distribution services available to support our electoral events. We always plan to have 10 facilities, which is 10 every, I mean, one in every province and one nationally. Hence, in the column that says actual achievement 2011-2012, you will see 10, which is the number of facilities, one per province and one nationally. Then /237, those are the number of warehouses that we have in the municipal sphere of government. And the last one is distribution service provider available. We always have one nationally to deal with this. And in the period under review, we had 10 national one warehouse nationally and 9 provincially, which makes us to achieve with that 10. We had 234 in the municipal sphere of government. And that is represents a deviation of 3 from the 237. But you will notice that three municipalities, in fact, merged in this period. And therefore, we have reduced our warehouses and consolidated in that area. We could not have said achieved because there's a slight deviation. But in truth and in reality, there should not be a deviation because every one of them had a facility. The number of voter education events support the strengthening of electoral democracy through education for public participation as a strategic outcome-oriented goal. And in this area, quite a number of changes have taken place. I have indicated when we started that we have looked at the basis of determining the performance indicators, and in a number of those instances, we have revised them to make them more meaningful. And the first one is the number of voter education events. You will recall that we defined an event as an activity, an educational activity that involved a certain number of people, and we counted those kind of activities, and we determined that number to be 89,321 at the time in 2011-2012. We had planned to have 992 of this. Actual achievement was 4,875. And this overachievement indicated that we certainly needed to revise the basis on which we were determining this. And I'm quite pleased, Chairperson, to indicate that from now henceforth, in fact, from this financial period, or after the financial period under review, we have revised this. We should not have a high deviation because we realize that the indicators that we heard were perhaps not the best indicator for the event, and we will be reporting from now on appropriately. But for the period, we have overachieved in terms of the indicators that we had set. The number of projects with strategic partners, I'm very pleased. Again, it's an area to indicate that although we have set ourselves 50 of those for the period under review, we have overachieved. And this is on account of the exponential increment in partnerships due to increased spontaneous requests from our organizations that we have found meaningful partnerships with. We take advantage of the partnerships as we go into the electoral period, and this is a welcome development. The third area in education is the quantity of educational materials that we have disseminated. In this area, Chairperson, we have not achieved our target. We had looked at 2 million of this printed. We were slightly under by 454,000, but you know, it is explained with respect to a lesser demand in terms of printed material, but there has been an increase in the number of other forms of the material that we were issuing. Notably, Braille material, which was scheduled for the end of the fiscal year, was delayed due to sign-offs between the Electoral Commission and the Braille authorities. We did find that the capacity to complete the work that we had was certainly limited, and some of it spilled over into the new financial period. The number of research projects that we have conducted, the chairperson has indicated that in the period under review, we had planned to have three, but we undertook five, and it was an exciting year for us. We looked at some very exciting research work that will help plan for our elections. We looked, amongst others, at the electronic voting scenario and asked our stakeholders in this nation, you know, their views on electronic voting and you know, whether we as a nation should in fact be doing something. And our stakeholders indicated overwhelmingly that we should in fact be exploring that environment even more. We have a work that we have commissioned, which was basically to look at the registration gap and how we engage, informing us how we should be planning to engage with young people in Maine. We've also looked at the supply side of the things that we do and how they are received by the persons that we serve, the voters, what their views are on certain things that we do, and all of that contributed to us overachieving in this area. We designed and implemented, in terms of designing and implementing knowledge management systems, we were looking at the policy for knowledge management. That policy was not approved in this period, but we are continuing to work in that area. And the delays really related to quite a number of the initiatives that we took and the processes for the approval of those policies. The policies have been looked at in this financial year, and I will report to you when we do the financial period after this one. The number of targeted media interactions per annum that we look at were at all exceeded except for the media analysis report. This were exceeded because of the number of some of the events, notably the e-voting seminar, really brought a lot of interest and quite a number of engagements with the media. And in that area, we are very pleased that we have overachieved in the main. The number of publications, of external publications, and here really we were looking at the annual report. We have this annual report, and there is no deviation. The number of targeted communication platforms that we had intended to use, by and large, we have achieved those in the areas that we had indicated on radio, print, and digital, but we did not do very, very well as anticipated. We just started with both Facebook and mobile and digital and online. And in that area, there is still work that we are doing. We had an underachievement. We have in that period developed and had representation on Facebook and Twitter, and these are areas for improvement leading to the electoral period in which we are going. The last area of our strategic outcome-oriented goals deals with supporting the core business of the Electoral Commission. And in this instance, the first one we're looking at is the date by which the comprehensive human resources strategy and plan is approved and we have compliance thereof. And the target date for approval was the 30th of June, which falls outside of the reporting period, and we are on course with that. The annual review of the HR plan is not applicable in this period, and we will be dealing with it in the next reporting period. In terms of looking at our integrated training strategy and plan, the election strategy and training plan was developed. We had intended for it to be approved and implemented by the 31st of March. It wasn't finalized by that period, but it was finalized shortly thereafter, and we are on course this year. We should be reporting appropriately in the following reporting period. The number of trained electoral officials is affected by a comment that the chairperson indicated earlier. The number of by-elections that we had planned to hold was slightly less than anticipated, and therefore we have a corresponding non-achievement on account of the reduced number of by-elections. The number of trained staff in this period, we had planned to train 450 persons. We have, in fact, trained 924. We brought forward quite a bit of the plan for training staff that we had in anticipation of the electoral period, general registration period coming. And in that regard, we have an overachievement in this area. I must indicate through you, Chairperson, that training is and continues to receive our attention leading to these elections. A number of challenges that the Chairperson spoke about do in fact point out to the fact that we have to emphasize training. Not only training in our national and provincial offices and at local level, but also the training of electoral officials. And in that regard, extensive plans have been put into place. We have revised our training methodology. We have devised modular training, which provides for shorter periods but regular training. And that's something that we'll report on in time and even when we deal with the preparations for elections at the appropriate time. We're also looking at the date by which comprehensive support services strategy and plan is approved, and that framework has been approved in the period under review. The annual review strategy and plan, annually reviewing the strategy and plan, that was not applicable in this period, but we will report on it in the relevant period. In terms of meeting statutory deadline in respect of budget, we have no deviation. Every one of those we have complied with, and so I'm pleased to say we have attained them. One of the items we have introduced in the last financial year, if I'm not mistaken, CFO, was this area of management report or management reporting, which we had said that we will achieve in every month. We will have one, and therefore in the year 12. We have certainly achieved that, and I'm pleased to say it is going very well in that area. In terms of reviewing financial policies and procedures, we have reviewed them, and we have new financial directives and delegations which were approved in January of the reporting period. In terms of preparing monthly compliance reports, we have in the organization every month compliance reports, and this report really have helped us greatly and in part deal with the next subject, which is the achievement of our unqualified audit report. This has been achieved. In fact, we do have a clean audit in this period, and one must say that because we were in a position to immediately look at the deviations every month, we were able to deal with this in time, and it gives us really great pleasure to say that this has been a good year from that point of view for us. I remember when we were here last time, on this occasion, members indicated to us that we should bring nothing back less than what we had. Perhaps it's the joy of being here today to say we have kept that word and done a little better than we had until, you know, the target was in this respect. In terms of approving first year ICT infrastructure plan in place, this was submitted for final review and approval. We had planned that it would be done by the 31st of March, but it happened slightly thereafter. There were challenges with some of the participants in this ICT plan. There are a number of persons that we have brought on board to deal with the subject who are not IEC people, but are experts in the field, and it was a challenge in the period to bring them together. We have since done so, and the plan is in place. Percentage network and application systems availability, we say our systems should be up 97% of the time. We have in this period attained 97.2%. And that gives us a slightly overachievement, but I say slightly because it's 0.2% of that we have attained. Annual legal review report submitted. That was submitted by the 31st of March as we had planned, and therefore we have had no deviation. There are quite a number of areas that we have reviewed in our performance our strategic outcome-oriented goals, and I must say that the five that we have presented here, the five broad strategic outcome-oriented goals, will be different in terms of the plan that we had put before you earlier in the year. You will recall that the Commission has Vision 2018, which has looked at some reconfiguration and new areas that we needed to focus on. And this then brings us to the end of the reporting that we have in this manner. For purposes of dealing with the financials, Chairperson, if you allow, I'd let the Chief Financial Officer to present the financial statements for the financial period ending 31st March 2013. I wish to thank you for the opportunity to present this report.
Trustee, over to you and this call.
Thank you, Chairperson and committee members. Good morning. It gives me pleasure to present the financial outcomes on a high level for the financial year ended the 31st of March 2013. I'll deal first with the report of the Auditor General. As already has been indicated by our Chairperson and our CEO, we achieved an unqualified audit opinion for this financial year. There were no emphasis of matter paragraphs, no additional matter paragraphs. There were no findings on the usefulness or reliability of predetermined objective information. There were no material instances of non-compliance noted by the Auditor General in the audit report, and there were no deficiencies in internal control that were considered significant enough by the Auditor General to note in his report either. The Auditor General did note the investigations that were then still in process in terms of Riverside Office Park in the audit report. If I could spend a minute or two talking about the challenges we face in terms of achieving clean audits. This year that we have dealt with was a year in which there were no significant electoral events, neither a major registration weekend nor an election. And as a consequence, one of our biggest risk areas, which is the employment of the large numbers of electoral staff, was not present in this year. In the previous financial year, we spent close on 200 million employing temporary staff for the actual elections. And with the employment of those numbers of people, there come the inherent risks attached to ensuring that all the relevant paperwork is in place and is filed in such a manner that we can identify it and collate it in terms of the audit. So notwithstanding the fact that we were clean in this year, we do not rest on our laurels, and we are well aware of the risks that lie ahead with our first registration weekend on the 9th and 10th of November in this year, and then going forward into the elections, which presumably will happen in the first quarter of the next financial year. In addition, we have a very decentralized procurement process. Procurement occurs in every electoral office at a municipal level, at a provincial level, as well as at national office level. And this means there are large numbers of staff internal to the organization that are involved in the procurement process. And we have put a fair amount of effort in over the past couple of years in terms of improving our processes, identifying areas of weakness, implementing the necessary controls to prevent and detect non-compliance, whilst at the same time being mindful that every rand we spend on administration is a rand we take away from service delivery. We have also had annual workshops in procurement, and some of these efforts are now starting to bear fruit, which is reflected in the audit outcome. In terms of the pure numbers, our basis of preparation is the same that it was last year. The financial statements are prepared in accordance with all the relevant rules and regulations. They are in compliance with the BFMA. They are in compliance with the relevant accounting and auditing standards. And there was no change in accounting policies. If I look at the actual numbers, you will note that the comparative figure, we had a deficit in the previous financial year of 460 million. This was because of the timing of the election. We rolled over significant funds into that year to fund that planned deficit. In this year, our surplus was 2.6 million, which means we effectively achieved, broadly speaking, our expected financial outcome. You will note that the employee-related costs have gone down from 412 million in the previous year to 369 in this year. Pardon me. Mainly as a result of the election which happened in the first quarter of the previous financial year and the large numbers of expansion staff that we can take on to help deal with that event. And the administration expenditure likewise dropped from 828 million in the previous year to 325 million in the current year. Again, that's mainly election-related expenditure. I said there's 200 million of stipends that we pay to the electoral staff that's included in the comparative figure. Also the cost of our advertising campaigns, the printing of ballot papers and other electoral materials that account for the close on 500 million rand drop in that line item. We ended the year with 43 million underspent in terms of budget, which we rolled forward into the current financial year. Looking at the balance sheet then on the asset side, last financial year, because the election happened early in the year, at the 31st of March 2012, we were probably at the bottom of our cycle in terms of electoral activity. And this year, the planning and procurement processes and so forth for the upcoming registration weekend started happening towards the end of the financial year just passed. So at the beginning of this calendar year, the last quarter of the last financial year, some of that activity started to take place, and as a consequence, some of our numbers are starting to increase slightly. Our stock numbers, although the procurement process has started, the deliveries haven't taken place, so that still represents a decrease due to by-elections. Our overall asset base is, broadly speaking, stable at this point, although there are some things we need to do in terms of ensuring a more regular asset management demand and procurement process. Being a relatively young organization, we are still suffering some peaks and troughs in terms of asset replenishment cycles, which we will address going forward. Then in terms of our liabilities, on the next slide, you will notice, as I said, the trade and other payables have increased from 41 to 63 million, showing first signs of the ramp up towards the upcoming registration weekend. And I think that's where I'll leave it. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. And thank you, CFO, for your presentation, as well as the brief by the chairperson. Thank you. Honourable members, it's time for questions. I had to notice earlier on Honourable Masala. You will be followed by Honourable Gum, Honourable McIntosh, Honourable De Freitas, Honourable Madonna Peterson. In that order, please.
me welcome the good progress which we are all proud to see. I think I speak on behalf of everyone, that we complained last time that we don't want anything less than that, because we always pride ourselves with the way they perform at the commission. So the best for us is to continue to see the kind of electoral commission that manages its business in a way that makes all of us as people of this country to feel that if they can manage the money well, then we don't have to worry about our election, our votes getting missing. Because the last thing that we need in any election is when we start talking about that vote going somewhere where it should not be going. We must always respect the will of the people and make sure that no one tampers with that right to vote for the people of their choice when we elect leaders. So on that note, Chair, I felt it important to highlight my appreciation and say congratulations to the whole leadership and the commission itself. We had some incidents in the past few years, and some are now cases for litigation before court, where people would go from one constituency and register in another constituency, even though they do not reside in that community. In our last interaction with the commission, there was no clear position on how you're going to tackle that issue in terms of preventing it, or rather engaging communities to ensure that you don't have to deal with those issues. Because you can imagine if we have all go to court to apply for interdict on every election because Abantu Khayelitsha, instead of registering in Khayelitsha, now they are passed to Gugulethu. People from Soshanguve are now passed to Soweto to win a particular VT. So those are the issues. And we know sometimes these things happen because the other one cannot win a particular vote in Centurion. So they take people from Soweto to Centurion. So we don't want those kind of things to happen, because then it taints the nature of the election process. So how is your plan to engage political parties at the PLC level to say, please don't do this? Because it is not done by people who don't know, but it is done in a very calculated way, as it has been done in Durban or KZN, for that matter. The other area, Chair, is that now we are going to the elections. At the level of the PSC nationally, there is a communication that is taking place. But that spirit of engaging political parties at the level of municipalities and in districts, that has not taken place as yet. So I'd like that kind of engagement to be, you know, pushed down, so that we have what is called a participatory ground level kind of a democracy. So that political parties don't have a situation where they have to complain all the time at the national PSCs. Because the people that we send to the PSCs at national, they have a particular responsibility, of course, over their parties. But in terms of your own report here, you do have your local party liaison committees, and I think those must take place. And right now, that is not the case. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. First of all, I want to make the point that I'm not so sure whether your registration process at the moment is as effective as it could be. It seems that you are depending to a very large extent on the two registration weekends. For example, for a long time now, I hope it has changed now after I've spoken to your relevant provincial people as well, but for some time, people in Khayelitsha had to actually travel to Mitchell's Plain to go and register that there wasn't even an IC office in Khayelitsha. So I just want to know from you how that process is going. not going to go into the matter of the details of the acquisition of the Riverside office, because it is now the subject of an inquiry by the ad hoc committee on which the chairperson and I am also serving. But what is disturbing is that, for example, there was this report in the Mail and Guardian last Friday, and it seems that as a result of this acquisition, to put it very euphemistically, the IEC is not really functioning optimally, and that there is tensions between commissioners, staff component, and so on. And I think we as a committee need to make it very clear to you that we cannot afford an IEC at this point in time to be in a sort of a problematic state in the wake of the upcoming elections. And we do expect of you, and I want you to comment on this matter about the tensions and so on, and how it's affecting your work. And we do expect of you to get your house in order in this regard. We will deal as Parliament with the public protector report, and you need to carry on with your work and make sure that you function optimally and that there are not these kinds of issues that is hampering your work. Thanks.
Honourable McIntosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Honourable Gao was asked in measure one of my questions. I do wish to ask a question on page 43 of your report, and also it relates also to page 53. My concern is the period of the report which covers, and so relating on page 43, it's provision and maintenance of office accommodation and infrastructure to enable employees, etc., to perform their daily duties in a secure environment. Appropriate office space is secured with active lease agreements in place. But I would appreciate knowing whether the period of this report covers the period of moving from Walker Street in Sunnyside to Centurion. I'm not want to get in controversy about where you moved to, but what I'm missing is when did you move and would this report cover it? And associated with that, on page 53, you say, compliance with laws and regulations, a detailed review of all procurement processes and documentation was undertaken in 2011 and 2012 financial year. My question is, that review, did it include looking at how you procure your leases? And I'm not just talking about the controversial property in the greater Pretoria area, but just generally in the Republic of South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Director.
Okay. First of all, once again, congratulations on running the entity so well and being not just a flagship in South Africa, but I believe the world, not even beyond the continent, in fact. So thank you for the excellent work. I just did a few questions that I have. The first is the issue with IEC officials and kind of acting inappropriately and clock air and not allowing independent candidates to register and that kind of thing. My question is, has kind of investigation be done into why these things are happening? Because it's unheard of before, not certainly that I know of, where officials would kind of do this kind of thing. Is it a lack of training? Is it just someone that's got the rails? And the reason I ask that is so that we know the reasons that wouldn't reoccur in the future. So it might be a question you may not be able to answer, but I'm asking it anyway. Then my concern is the level of registrations amongst the youth, which continue to be incredibly low, and I'm linking it to your sort of work in social media realm, which I think needs to be upped and improved, which is becoming increasingly more and more specialized. And I think that is the language that the youth is talking and seeking. And I'm wondering if there's more being done. I share the same concerns with Honourable Gaum in that sense that the IEC is relying too much on the registration weekend in November and possibly the one at the beginning of the year, when actually people can register any time. And I don't think enough has been communicated to tell people you can actually register right now. Maybe you could just unpack all that, you know, youth. You know, we've got to find new and interesting and exciting ways, and billboards and adverts and so forth will only reach a certain sector of the market, I suspect. And perhaps research needs to be done that regard. I'm glad the chairperson earlier emphasized the importance of presiding officers and their knowledge on electoral law and what needs to be done on the spot, because I have personal experience in these kind of things. We have to actually show, I always carry the book with me, the little booklets, and actually show this is the way it is, because it's often interpreted as trying to get sort of party political involved and not saying this is actually the law. Then I'm interested to hear what was said about braille material. Is this pertaining to painting material in braille, or is it ballots in braille, or whatever, you know, we could tell us a little more about that. And if it is ballots in braille, which I don't think it is, how would you know how much to send where? I'm just interested in that because I think it's important. And in the electronic voting, you say that you did do, or you are doing surveys with regards to electronic voting. I'm personally surprised that you say that South Africans are keen and interested in electronic voting. Have you undertaken the survey amongst the rural communities where computers are a novelty, don't exist, and that kind of thing? Or a lot of these people in rural communities actually don't know what electronic voting is. So perhaps you could just tell us a little bit more about that. But it's exciting if South Africans are kind of looking at electronic voting and are liking the idea. And then just looking at your presentation on page 35, I'm sensing, reading between the lines, there seems to be problems with the ICT on the computer side and whatever. Is there a problem, or am I reading too much into it? There seems to be a delay. It's not sort of the slickness that we're experiencing from the IEC normally. So is there a problem in this regard? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Madeline Peterson.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to congratulate IEC for the good work they've done. But my question, though, still relates to the braille part of it. You spoke about that there was a delay for the delivery of braille material, and you spoke about the setbacks in signing off between the Electoral Commission and the braille authorities. I just want to know why were the setbacks and why this delay. Second question, what is the percentage of persons with disabilities employed by the IEC, and why does this continue not to be reported on the annual reports? The third one, I don't know if this was asked too, what has led to the continued low capacity, the IT operation components? Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is simple. For the previous years, we've been talking about voter education, which we believe is happening, but my take is that all these other things that are happening through a route that has been quoted by members just now is because of that particular element of voter education. What is it that we are doing as IEC to ensure that we actually put an emphasis on this particular area? One, the very same issue of passing of people. I do not think it's something that has to do with maybe a calculation that was mentioned earlier on. But what we've picked up during the elections and by elections is that most people would have been registered in a certain area, and they move due to work-related issues to another area. And at that particular area, then there's by-elections or whatever, from the place where they originate. tradition, it's their original place. They would go and want to vote there. And I think if we educate people enough for them to be aware that once they move from one area to another, they need to then register where they are residing, depending on whether where they are residing is a permanent residence for them, because that is another thing. Some would be there temporarily, and when voting time comes, they go to voting stations. There are also some people who have been returned because they are not registered at that particular voting station. It's not only those who are taken there, but there are also those who would want to vote there, but they can't vote because they are not registered. So I think we need to really put an emphasis on the issue of educating our voters for them to understand what is it that we want and what is their responsibilities as voters. The other thing is the issue of staff and the mere fact which we had raised earlier on in terms of saying it seems, and we understand the manner in which IEC works, but you only have certain staff members during elections, and after that they are no longer there because you feel they don't have anything to do. But that on its own has its own pros and cons. Why? Because you would find that this particular person would understand the scope and the work at that particular time, but the gap in between also have an issue to that person. When he comes back, he still wants to operate the same way he was, but the material conditions around that area has changed, and it's very difficult for them to adapt to those particular changes, which to me says, even though they may not necessarily be there all the time, but training and education has to take place through and through so that they get to understand the changes that are there. And I would like to really appreciate this particular report in terms of what we pick up has been happening, both financially and otherwise. There's quite a great improvement as compared to the other years. But would want to say, if the committee allows me, that there are matters that are said to have been under investigation, that we don't deal with that now, wait for the outcome of the investigation, and we deal with them at that particular point. And lastly, Chair, the outreach program of the IEC. We have requested that constituencies should actually get this particular program so that we are able to ensure that people are and our members are participating in this kind of program so that they understand what IEC is doing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable McIntosh, again.
Madam Chair, you know, the Chairman of our Commission is not a politician. She is a very respectable woman and has done an amazing job as the CEO and now as the Chairman. My concern is it's partly been raised by what the Honourable Baum brought up. And I would like to suggest, Madam Chair, that our Commission Chair considers very carefully her own position. I've read the report by the Public Protector with considerable care. It's available on the website. And my real concern is that I believe the Chair and ourselves love the IEC. And it's right. It's an absolute example to the whole world of a good independent electoral commission. And my question to the Chair is whether she would not consider discussing with the Minister, Minister Pandor, and if necessary with the President himself, whether she should not resign at this stage or withdraw from the Commission to enable us to have an election without the kind of controversies which the Honourable Gaum has referred to in his question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
No, Honourable Member, we are not going to deal with the matter here. The matter is before Parliament, and the Chairperson is not
Chairperson, and yes, I would like to, on behalf of the committee, congratulate the IEC for receiving a clean audit opinion after 2 years of unqualified reports. And, you know, and to mention that when we had our meeting with the AG, and noting that you guys have achieved so many of your targets, compared to, it was very admirable compared to many other government entities who were unable to do it. We have noted that, and we're very much aware of it. But mine is just a comment, Chairperson. I would like to say that I don't know what is it that the IEC could do to assist, because when you bounce there, there is a feeling of some confusion from our people with the smart card issue. People are concerned whether they will be expected to use smart cards or their green ID, barcoded ID book, for the coming elections. And I think maybe the IEC has to say, to clear that, because they are a bit concerned. We understand as a committee that the process of the smart card is, when it starts to kick in, is going to be done for over 7 years. But they seem to be very much concerned about the issue that maybe they will be expected to have the smart card, the IDs might not be used for the forthcoming elections. Thank you.
Salo, I wonder if the commission will consider, you know, in the tertiary institutions recently and even presently, there are these SRC elections that are taking place. And we must accept that the environment in tertiary institutions is now, and I think it's appreciated, it's something that I appreciate, that young people are becoming more and more active in the politics of their own education. I think that is interesting. But political parties have now taken that space, and they are using that platform to talk about a range of other issues in these very same institutions. And somehow now you find that the administrators in the institutions are also taking political positions when it comes to how these elections, and in fact, who should participate in a democratic election of a student body. Now, I would try to make this appeal to the IEC for the second time now. I would like to request that you consider engaging the higher education in ensuring that you continue to play the role that you once had, which you then had to pull out. Because you had that kind of involvement at that age. We don't want these institutions to become a battleground for political parties, where we end up having people stabbing each other, for instance in TUT, Limpopo, and some being suspended, obviously from one particular side, not from all the sides that are found to be problematic. Because now the institution and those who are in charge, they then take sides, who should be suspended when these fights should be expelled. But if we're the IEC and doing what they do outside, which is with our elections in the communities, I think the process could be better improved. Because in Fort Hare, about a week or so ago, we had a problem where we wanted to address students in terms of the issues of students, but you'll find that others are blocking others because they do not believe in the democracy that the IEC is preaching. So we want to say, Chairperson, that in South Africa we've had a very good commission. And I think the CEO has been a very good CEO before she became the chairperson. Yeah, so I would be coming from another island to say anyone should resign. I'm saying that we should allow the commission to help guide this country and go with the spirit of unity among them. But over and above that, never to compromise the quality of our own of the elections in the continent, and I can tell you, people would love to be in South Africa to see. That's why even when they report, they are saying it's in this report, others come from all over the world to witness the work that is done by the very people that are before us. It is important, therefore, to appreciate the kind of performance, quality, and over and above that, the commitment of the commission to serve all of us. I would be the first one to complain and say, no, but I'm from the opposition, you see, it's easy to do it. But I can tell you now, to continue to have confidence in them as members, it's something that should go down in ensuring that the community on the ground have the kind of confidence that we all share. So, Chair, my plea is that please help us to help the students when they list institutions. We want them to come out and be leaders who believe in democracy. And that is the best way we can do it.
No, I'm not going to take a second round of fails. Can I do the honorable complaint? Can we afford the commissioner and the CEO to respond to questions? The CFO, I'm sure if there are any questions to you, Chairperson or commissioner?
Chair, there are also a couple of questions that I'd like to respond to, but I'm very happy to do so after the chairperson.
Thank you very much to all the members for their questions. Obviously, I'll try to deal with some, and colleagues will help me to deal with others. We would like to appreciate all the commendations that we received from members of the committee. We are trying hard to ensure that we improve efficiency within our commission, and also insofar as electoral processes are concerned, we're trying hard to ensure that we improve on professionalism, particularly of the people who assist us in the voting stations, because that is really where we're meeting lots of challenges. There is a question that has been put by more than one member regarding continuous registration, to say why do we rely so much on general registration weekends and not improve on the continuous registration that happens in our local offices. We have just found that we have tried to popularize continuous registration, and members would know most of our offices are situated within municipalities which operate during office hours, 8 to 5 o'clock, and people are at work. So that system does not work quite well. But we also do try to have registration weekends for a by-election, that we do encourage people to register. That has brought with it its own problem of passing. So as it is, we engaged in a discussion whether we should even stop the registration weekend for by-elections. Of course, we can't do that because registration is a continuous process in this country, so we cannot stop it in law. But the statistics tell us that we are able to catch a very large number of people to register when we open our voting stations. And at least at that occasion, we are able also to assure some accuracy of our voters. So we do try to communicate continuous registration, but we are the first ones to accept that it hasn't worked as well as it should. So if your colleagues also would like to add to that, they can do that. But passing is a problem that is developing, and we have also to be careful that we should not say that it's happening, it is widespread. It is there, it is not widespread. We have to nip it in the bud. But political parties have to help us. because that is where the problem is. The political parties, the independent candidates as well, are the people who orchestrate busing and who also encourage communities to be bused. And that is why our appeal goes to political parties, to say please assist us. On our side, we have begun to communicate messages to the electorate to say busing is an offense because you have to register where you are ordinarily resident. And if you register fraudulently, it's an offense. So the strategy that we have has to be multi-pronged. We have to ensure that where there are issues of fraudulent registration, the police have to act as well. Because until such time that the police act and act decisively, you know, people will continue to bust. So it's the political parties, it's also the police. But the CEO will also talk about strategies and processes that we have put in place at an operational level and technical level to try and minimize the busing. And when he speaks about that, when he responds, he will talk about this. And at community level, we have come up with what we call ward-based civil education, where we now try to deal with civic education going right to the ward level and making sure that we have conversations with the communities at that level and dialogues and begin to talk about these issues. The issue of where we are as a commission, of course, we are faced with something that we have never been have to confront with, being this public sector investigation. But I'd like to, and I align myself with a view that says that that this matter is undergoing a particular process, and it's probably not appropriate for us to discuss it here. Safe to say that as a commission, we have our eye on the ball. We have the 2014 election. That requires us to deal with lots of issues that we are dealing with. I would like to say to the members of the committee that as members of the commission, as the administration, we are making sure and that we are preparing for elections, that we are not distracted. But that is why we launched elections 2014 on the 9th. We have to be cohesive. We read things, let me just say for myself that I read things in the newspaper. I don't know where those things come from. I don't know who speaks to the newspaper, because the newspaper never spoke to me except to send me a one line to say, are there divisions within the newspaper, within the IC? And I said, oh. So I also read those things, so I'm not sure where they're coming from. Safe to say to the committee, there is unity within the commission, unity of purpose. We are aware that we have an election coming and that we have to put all our focus towards preparing for that election. We have to take leadership in that regard as commissioners in particular, so that the secretariat led by Mr. Moyabza should also not lose focus, and they haven't so far lost focus. We want to make that undertaking on every chairperson of the solution. I would like to assure members that there's no division and we are working very hard to prepare for the election. I'm not responding to anything, as I say, colleagues will respond to Trokwe. The Trokwe matter, we just received, we received the court order, but we received the full judgment, I think yesterday or so, day before. We have implemented some of the orders. We were asked to postpone the by-election, which we did. We were asked to conduct an investigation into the conduct of our officials. That has also happened. The question why the specific question, what has happened, why have our officials behaved in the way they are alleged to have behaved, the investigation will reveal that. to see what actually happened there, because at this point in time, we really are not sure. So we're looking at the travel situation, we're looking at Abakulus, we're looking at those issues, and we're saying to ourselves, what is it that we have to do to ensure that we improve on levels of efficiency, of professionalism, of adherence to the law, and to ensure that at least at presiding officer level, those who have not met our standards are not re-engaged. We have to do an evaluation, and those that have been found wanting should not be engaged again as presiding officers. Electronic voting and the Braille, and my colleagues will respond to this. The ad hoc staff, I think what we need to say here is that we have, as you know, Honorable Postman, that we have the 2,500 that we, 250,000 that we pull in as electoral staff. We try to retain as many of them as possible so that we retain institutional memory and we use them over and over again. But we evaluate them. We have to do that. Those really who have not performed well in terms of the assessments that we continue, that we do, and those who, you know, have had lots of complaints, if we have had lots of complaints from political parties about their conduct, we also, you know, don't engage them again. But we also have what we call expansion staff. These are the people that we bring for almost 18 months in the run up to an election. And those also, we try to retain the same people, and we try to intensify training on them, for them, so that and most of them, like I say, are the people that we have used before. The PLCs at local level are not working well, and this has been the case for many years. And I think the challenge there also is with political parties, because political parties tend to send different people all the time to attend the PLCs, and that is really where the problem comes. If political parties can ensure that they retain or they get the same people to attend, but we know that there is a lot of movement and changes at local government level among councillors, but maybe we should put more emphasis. One of the things that we have done that has helped is for commissioners, you know, for us organize combined provincial PLCs and local PLCs, and we have a combined meeting and members of the commission attend. That has also assisted, but I think the political parties are the ones who have to assist us in this regard. I just want to deal with the last issue, is the SRC election. You know, there are two types of elections that we have assisted with that have presented us with challenges. SRC elections and elections for traditional councils. Those two elections have really presented us with challenges, because most of the time we come in and conduct elections within rules that are not compatible with the way that we do things, rules that are not compatible to, you know, resulting in a free and fair election. The Constitution finds that of these bodies have gaps, and the legislative framework for the traditional council elections also find that, you know, have some difficulties. But we are committed to assisting, but what we are saying is that we can only assist, for instance, our assistance can only be meaningful at universities if our involvement is quite early. We assist them with the way that they set up their constitutions, in the way that they set up their guidelines for managing an election. If we come too late, you know, when there is an election guideline that is problematic, the outcome becomes problematic, and our credibility is also affected, you know, in that sense. But we think that we have to work, you know, to have a structured program when we don't have an election ourselves, and assist the SRCs to do that. We've done that. We have in the past had convened a big meeting of all SRCs throughout the country to look at the electoral democracy
as universities and something that we have to pay attention to when we have more time after the elections. Chairperson, with your kind permission, let me leave it here and leave it to Commissioner Sayed to say something, and then we'll ask the CEO and his team to respond to our questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you as well. It's always an honour to be with the Portfolio Committee in Parliament, and for me always a special honour for a variety of reasons, particularly also to be in this particular meeting room where I have a number of different memories from a different era in my life. I'd like to just, there was a couple of the questions that were raised before. I also would like to just address very specifically Advocate Graham's question, but there are a number of issues with respect to trends that have emerged that I think that we need to think about very carefully, not only as the Electoral Commission, but also as political parties, because it really creates very interesting new pressure points as our democracy grows and evolves that we need to think about strategically, because it poses challenges. The first is the increased presence, not dominance yet, but certainly presence in by-elections of independent candidates. The way in which independent electoral commissioners functioned for decades was to liaise with political parties through party liaison committees. These structures have served the institutions and the political parties very, very well, but in arenas where we are also having to deal with independent candidates who are equally entitled with due notice to voters' rolls, to electoral information, there are new challenges that we have to grapple with in how we bring independents into structures, how we relate to them, that they have the same information that political parties also have. Their political and civil rights are different as individuals, and those are new challenges that an electoral management body will have to grapple with going forward. I think that we also have to think very carefully in the lead-up to the electoral period about questions of political tolerance. I think we've seen incidents emerging on university campuses. We've seen incidents where we've actually seen members of political parties murdered, a political party member was murdered in Limpopo province. And I think that if we really want to grapple with our maturing democracy 20 years into the electoral cycles, life cycles of our country, we need to think about questions of political tolerance as the EMB and how we also sharpen and refresh our memory in that regard. On questions of the youth and registration, and perhaps I here reflect the biases of a commissioner who spends at least half the time teaching at a university and not only being a commissioner, I think it's very important to realize, as the honourable members have pointed out, that the youth are on social media. But I think that we also need to look a little bit deeper. One of the interesting findings present in the Human Sciences Research Council study that was conducted for the IEC asked quite profound questions about young people, how they relate to political institutions, whether they relate to political institutions, what their own sense of political institutional life is, and they came up with a number of really fascinating questions as to whether they are interested in politics and how they relate to politics. And it doesn't only pose a challenge to the EAB as how do we reach them in social media in registration terms, it also poses a challenge to all of us collectively to think very deeply about how we relate to a younger generation that has to appropriate and take ownership over the institutions of a constitutional democracy, as we also stand at the cusp of generational change in our society with a very young demographic and a very young population pyramid. Then on the issues that were raised by a variety of members with respect to the report of the public protector, and I am mindful and careful of the desires that have been expressed by members that we need to defer these issues to the ad hoc committee process. But I do think I would be remiss as a commissioner if I do not also share with honourable members some of the issues that have arisen for the electoral commissioners who have decided to respect and uphold the findings and recommendations of a sister Chapter 9 institution. And I think it's very important that I bring that to your attention as honourable members who will be engaged in an ad hoc committee process, because the constitutional issues that are involved in these matters are not insignificant. They are not unimportant. And I think that we are all very alive to the constitutional issues involved in these matters. I think it's important also to share with honourable members that, as you would know, the recommendations of the Public Protector's Report also entail ongoing liaison between the Electoral Commission and the National Treasury. This liaison is ongoing in terms of the Commission's decision to implement the recommendations of the Public Protector's Report. And therefore, it would be truly remiss of me as a constitutional office bearer not to share with honourable members that there are significant constitutional issues here to which members of the Commission are alive. And as honourable members will be aware, four of the members of the Electoral Commission are upholding the recommendations of the Public Protector's Report. Now, that does not create a space of perfect comfort for anyone, not for our chairperson and not for us. But it also doesn't mean that we do not have unity of purpose when we focus on the upcoming preparations for the election. And I think those are the reassurances that we can give you. Collectively, we are focused on the election, on the upcoming election. The challenges that we have in dealing what is not an unchallenging constitutional situation is not only ours, it is also yours as honourable members. Thank you very much.
The CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must thank the Chair and the Commissioner for dealing with a number of those issues that were raised. Interventions connected to busing, there are quite a number of those that we have implemented, and they are in three broad categories. One is educational. We part of education that we now have, which we have not had to deal with previously in by-elections, is dealing with the fact, voters who are affected in a by-election must know that busing is a criminal offence and they will be prosecuted personally. It is something we never thought we needed to do, but we do at the moment. The second one is it's a matter that the Chair has indicated. We have extensively engaged with party liaison committees. And it is very interesting to point out that parties have indicated their support against busing. Now, they've also pointed out, one must say, that it does require them to do certain things within, their structures, sending out a message to say it is not acceptable. If their members are found doing that, they will take action. And that really lies within parties. But what we are doing at the moment is that in the investigations that we are undertaking on the persons alleged to have been bused, we have identified those persons by name. We have set notices on them. In fact, we have visited them where we have not found them. We have served notices, and we have a number of findings which we have shared with TLCs, but also with the police who are investigating these matters. And one must expect that action will be taken against persons either who have caused this busing to happen or those that have participated in it. And I'm asking that we observe these investigations where the police are involved. Internally in the IEC, a number of measures have been taken, and we are grappling with others. But one, every one of the scanners we use for by-election, we identify, and we allocate to a person by name, which has happened in the past, but was fairly a loose arrangement. Why is it important to identify the scanner and the person by name? It's because the person that is operating the scanner needs to put in the identification document so that if there are questions to be asked later on busing, they can surely explain this. We do so because where they register people, when persons come to register, we now also identify whether these were registered voters before on another scan and say, well, you're changing, have you moved? We are beginning to ask this question that we've never asked before. And in fact, in certain instances, persons have had to go back and say, oh, no, then I didn't understand that. This is not an area where I should go. So there are a number of those. There are others that we deal with internally, which I can assure members, perhaps it's best not to deal with them in public, but internally we look at the patterns, and before we certify the voter's role, we look at what it is that we may need to to investigate before we even certify the voter's role. The issue raised with respect to page 43 of the report by Santosh, on page 43, you are asking whether we did that before we moved from Sunnyside. The period covered by this report is a period within which we had already moved from Sunnyside. So we are really covering a period when we were where we are now at the moment. In terms of paragraph 40 to 53, you see in that paragraph a number of the things that we say have contributed to the kind of audit report we are presenting. I must indicate that since the AG's report in 2010-2011, indicating a number of compliance issues and policy issues that you also raised as members of the committee, quite a number of measures have been taking place. A large number of those, of course, were implemented as well in the period. So it has been a process of addressing a number of improvements that were identified in the work that we were doing. Dr. De Vries raised the issue of Tlokwe, and the chairperson dealt with Tlokwe extensively, and also the issue of Braille, whether that related to the training materials or related to the ballots. We have an arrangement with SANCAL to say materials that we develop in for educational purposes elsewhere, you know, in normal, you know, printing volumes, that we would also work with them to do that and translate that into Braille printing. There is, in fact, an arrangement that we have with them. But what we are relating to here is that it depends on the capacity that they have. It's not a large industry, and some of the materials that we print are very voluminous. And in certain instances, it is not impossible for them to deal with all of those materials. However, we are continuing to work with them, and we engage them for the training of persons in the area of their speciality, and that really helps us enormously at the Electoral Commission. Have we taken surveys in rural communities? No. On electronic voting, no. Perhaps the point that I was making was we engage with stakeholders on what we see happening in the world in the electronic voting space, and looking at what we are doing as South Africans and saying, are there reasons we should be concerned about? Should we be considering, moving to electronic voting? If so, what are the compelling reasons and so on and so forth? And the stakeholders indicated that explore that some more. That's what we are doing at the moment. There was a question, Peterson Madonna, partly relating to Braille that I answered. It is capacity, but I want to assure you, we are in constant liaison with ANCAP, who have service providers with the greatest capacity, if not the only capacity that we know in Braille printing. And our relationship with them is so strong. I don't think there is reason to worry about that. I'll ask Norman to deal with the question of percentage staff we employ with disabilities and the related question. There was a question related to what are we doing in educating voters with respect to busing. Ms. Bothman, I think that now is answered. There's also an issue of a proposal that should communicate our outreach programs to constituencies. I'm not sure whether that meant political constituencies, but I must say to you that at the beginning of this year, in addition to the stakeholder that we are working with, we have established with civil society across the nation and in every province what we call a national consultative forum with stakeholders. In that forum, which is it's made up of national representation, but also in every province, a provincial representation that then does work in the municipal sphere. We share our programs extensively with them. So I'm not sure, you know, whether when you said constituencies, I see them as the constituencies that you're referring to. But I also wanted to assure you that these, the outreach program as we have, the entire strategy and plan has been shared with our PLCs nationally. We met with them last week. In fact, we gave them a breakdown of when they should be expecting certain things to happen, so that they are aware of this. I must also point out that there was an issue of how can the IEC help deal with communicating the issue of smart card ID as not being the only valid tender. I think it was asked by Nema Kubu, she stepped out. In her absence, I need to point out that we are clearly in our messages communicating that the smart card ID is one of the tenders we use for registering voters. We'll still continue to use the green barcode ID or the temporary registration temporary identification certificate. So I think what we are getting is that we should in fact carry that message continuously so that, you know, persons are not unnecessarily distressed by the fact that they will not be having this smart card identity document. The last thing I wanted to add was that relating to PLC by Mshagas Masela. The chairperson dealt with that matter extensively. But very interestingly, we also, just last week in PLCs, and I thought it was a very kind of constructive engagement with parties represented at the PLC nationally. They requested, you know, accepting that there are challenges at local level, persons coming, you know, attending at one point and not attending at the other, and so on and so forth. They requested us to enforce, you know, the attendance with, you know, the reporting on attendance with them, so that they are able to engage proactively with their reps at local level. This, of course, is something that we will do, and we will work with them. It is important for the PLCs at this point to be meeting at local level. There are quite a number of developments that are taking place at that level. One, there are a number of determinations being made by the Municipal Demarcation Board that may not necessarily affect these elections, but certainly will be affecting the 2016 local government elections. And by the time those PLCs rise up to those things, there will be matters that are gone and we are not able to deal with. And the PLC at national level, and I understand at provincial level, have a good understanding of that. So it's the one part. The second part really relates to the importance of vetting, as it were, electoral staff. We, as you know, are employing a number of people that will be registration officials in the registration weekend of the 9th and the 10th of November, and we are dependent on members of the local PLCs once we identify the potential electoral staff for that registration weekend, on them objecting in terms of the criteria that may result in this person's not being declared fit to, you know, to be registration officials. In the absence of their objections, and in, you know, where we find that these persons are not going to be impartial, of course we act. But where we are convinced that these are fit and proper people, but somebody knows that they are in fact not, we rely on those PLCs, and we have made that very clear to them. And I'm sure they are very, very interested in these persons being appropriately dealt with. I think I have dealt with the ones that I could see, not dealt with other than ones that I've asked my colleague Donan and Fiona. There might be one or two that I've missed. Please feel free to write them as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. There are two issues. On the matter of disability, page 65 of the report deals with permanent staff, but let me immediately say that In terms of the electoral staff, we on this occasion have also proactively tried to promote the engagement of disabled people. Now, we've always set a target of 2%, but our system in which we capture the details of the 250,000 people that's going to work also now has a requirement that they indicate disability where that is applicable, so that we could report back on to what extent we have been successful in promoting the engagement of people that fall in this category. There were some questions on the ICT environment and the IEC as well. I think we have always been at the leading edge of use of technology and achieving targets. What was not that well done was the documentation of the various processes, and the report refers to those particular elements, not the functional side, but the proper documentation, which is at this stage now complete. And that, of course, is important so as to ensure continuity for people that that follow at a later stage. The uptime of 97%, I think, is exceptional. You would normally find that at the best of times, in the best of industries, it would be in the range of a 5% downtime. We set a target higher than that at 97, and I've received it, in fact, that particular standard. So from a functional perspective, I think we are doing well. Also keeping in mind a background that as a portion of our total budget, ICT has diminished as a percentage of spend really substantially, and that we also continuously keep on adding new facilities, programs, projects that is ICT-based. So it is utilized at this stage, I think, pretty close to optimal, but also optimal performance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to the response from officials as well as commissioners for the IEC. Are there any further questions that members want to pose? Honourable Freitas. Only one, it seems. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted just a supplementary question on the registration of young people, something that occurred to me. Can this exercise not be linked up with the exercise of Home Affairs in trying to get ID books with young people? And can kind of two birds not be killed with one stone, where you approach the young people to get their ID books and at the same time say, well, how about registering you now got ID books? That kind of campaign to kind of up the youth, because you know, there's this rate in 40 years' time, there'll be very few voters. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe just from my side to say that we are quite happy to hear from the IEC, both the chairperson and Commissioner Tallard, that there is unity of purpose within the Commission, that there are not divisions. And as I indicated earlier, it is important for the Commission to allow the process within the ad hoc committee and whatever follows on that to be completed, and that in the meantime, as indicated also by both the commissioners here today, that you do focus on the work that you have, the very important job of running the upcoming elections. We, from our side, will support you in that regard, and we do hope that any divisions that might appear to be there would not play any role in that regard, but we are very glad for you to indicate very clearly to us today that there are no divisions within the IEC. Thank you. Can you answer the question, please, posed by Honourable De Freitas?
We do have joined campaigns with Home Affairs, actually. We ensure that whenever they in fact, when we register people, they also come with us to issue IDs. In fact, there's been a number of initiatives, you know, that or organizations that want to join with us that we're looking at, including Proudly South Africa, because they are popularizing the new smart card. So we're looking at these joint initiatives, but Home Affairs and us are working quite closely at local level for that matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I omitted, and perhaps I should add, the 2014 national and provincial elections campaign, one must say that it is slightly skewed to focus on young people. I say slightly skewed in that a substantial amount of that campaign seeks to address young people. But one must also point out that we have a number of initiatives, one of which we have completed in this week. We were in schools in 8 provinces, having worked with the Department of Education since March, April, to look at opportunities where we can have some, you know, a week which we call a school democracy week, which has proceeded fairly well, and where we had opportunities to register these learners, we have done so. But we are clearly looking at opportunities like that going forward, and many of those we will identify. And perhaps it's important to point out that other than the campaign being youthful, there are engagements that young people have. If one looks at the engagement on our Twitter and Facebook platforms, and we do believe that we are beginning to probably talk to them and probably will understand them, in addition to the work that was reported by Commissioner earlier on looking at how best do we serve young people in that space. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, CEO. Another round or no? Okay. Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, the CEO, together with the Commissioner Talia and other members of the team. Thank you very much for the good work that you are doing. Honorable Marcella has said a mouthful, and I wouldn't like to, you know, say what he has said because I'm clamping the emotion. So I'm from Wimosha, actually. I just wanted to add to say that we have elections next year. And I wish the Commission could just be focused on preparations towards the coming elections, because it is important that we stay focused and the Commission is united with regard to this task that is before you. And we also want to continue with your good work that you are doing, that of getting the unclean, unqualified status. Let us continue doing that. We want to thank you very much for your good work, and we hope other entities will copy from you with your good work. Thank you very much. And also want to thank the members of the Friday meeting. Thank you very much for coming. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.